I already mentioned some of the negative feedback I got after that 1991 conference. Another comment that I frequently got was, you know, listen, I have lots of education in meteorology, but I have no journalism training whatsoever. I couldn't even tell you how to put together a story. So just out of curiosity, how many of you, without the help of a producer, put together your own stories? I don't mean frequency. I don't care if it's every day. I don't care if it's once a year. But you have the ability to put together your own story. And I don't know if any of you want to answer the question, but how many of you probably are a little intimidated? You don't know how to write a story, or you could probably use a little help in that area. Okay, and that's fine. Now, what we're going to do here, I did a really cool story last year. And what I'm going to do, I debated whether I should show you the story first and let you see it as a viewer saw it without any, you know, any advance talk, or talk about the thought process first on some of the creative elements and then show you the story. And I think that's what I'm going to do, because I think in terms of your education, this will be more beneficial. So let me first tell you, you just got to be looking for these stories. And in my case, when my kids were in elementary school, I chaperoned a lot of their field trips and stuff. And one of the traditions of that school was the fifth graders did a three-day trip to a local YMCA camp. It was a three-day overnight thing. And at the camp, one of the activities, they took the kids on this hike deep into the woods, and in the middle of this forest was a bog. Now, a bog, I'm not going to explain it now because you'll see it in the story, but it's a very rare environmental treasure in Michigan, at least, and they're more common in Europe, but and in other parts of the country. But in Michigan, they're pretty rare, and so it was just one of the coolest things I ever saw, and so I had to do a story about this, and so you know, I bought my time. I actually waited till I did my other son's field trip as well, so I could get a little more information and see it again and kind of develop what I wanted to do. And so, first of all, in pitching the story, I first went to my weekend morning show producer. This was a story that was going to be kind of Charles Kuralt-ish. It needed time to breathe. And so I said, listen, I've got a piece here, and it's going to need some extra time, but it's going to be an original story for you guys. And I already had asked. Nobody had ever done a story on the bog, so it was our exclusive. That's a great buzzword. If you've got a story that's only yours, you know, they love exclusives. And so the producer was like, yeah, I'm all over it. That's great. Just get a crew. And so it took some time, you know, to get the crew, because I needed a half a day to do it. And basically, I wasn't going to do the story till it was convenient for me. And so there were times that I could and times that I couldn't, times there was a crew, times there wasn't. Finally, we kind of hooked up, and I was requested, and I was able to get our best photographer, too. And later you can ask me about the Dave Klein, Walter Cronkite story. Some of you have already heard it. It's pretty remarkable. But anyhow, so we went out to shoot the story. Now, let's talk about the thought process. This was a rare environmental treasure, and in past talks I've told you, you'd like to start your story sometimes with your best piece of video or a very compelling soundbite, something that grabs people. Well, in this case, I wanted to use kind of the mystery of what is this thing as the thing to grab the viewer, because I felt that if I started the story by saying, hey, over in Milford there is a bog, you know, or something of that nature, there would be people that just wouldn't care, and they might just flip the channel. They might not want to see a story about a bog. So what I decided was the anchor lead-in was not going to mention bog. It was just going to be that we've got this environmental treasure. And in the start of the piece, again, I wasn't just going to start with, well, this is a bog, but rather I was going to do what they did with the kids, and that is we were going to do with the photographer, we're going to hike through the woods, and I'll shoot a couple of stand-ups and, you know, show some of the changes that are occurring, but still not give away what we're going to see until we actually get there. So there's that area of mysterioso, you know, what is this? What's this thing going to be? And I found that was very effective. People really found, a lot of people watched the whole story and found it to be a very good story. Now, stand-ups. Now, and I've said this many times before, I was not born with the God-given talent that a lot of you have, but what we did do is we did some things that brought out natural sound is very important in a story like this. And so here's a great idea that my photographer had. We're doing these stand-ups, you know, walking through the forest. What he did is he had me take the microphone off and run it down my leg, down to just above my boot level. And then then he took close-up shots of my feet as I walked, you know, over some leaves and stuff. Now, I tell you, the sound of crunching leaves when you have that microphone down by your feet was just, it was great. And that was a transition shot between two of the stand-ups. We used natural sound, and it was just not a shot that you would expect to necessarily see, because I'm walking through the forest, and then, you know, we had to go to another shot of me in another spot in the forest, but that was a transition shot, a walking shot, and the natural sound was great. We got to another spot in the forest, and at this point now, we're starting to lose the foundation beneath us. They actually have a wooden path now, and just off that path, they have this big stick, and they show the kids, they stick this stick down, and all of a sudden, the stick will go down 7 feet. If it's like an 8-foot stick, it'll go down 7 feet if you push it all the way. And so I did a stand-up showing, okay, we're starting to lose the ground beneath us, and I shoved the stick into the ground. But then after we did a couple of takes of that stand-up, what we did was then, we put the microphone, put it back down on my pant leg where it was close, but, out of sight, and he focused in on close-ups of the stick going into the muck. And again, a close-up shot, and you got that sound, that, and it's just, it was something, again, that was a piece of Nat sound that really enhanced the piece. Then we get to the clearing, and he did a shot now. He swung his camera around from the path to the clearing, knowing, and I talked about him in advance, and I would advise this. If it's a story that you're planning ahead of time, talk with your photographer in advance about what you want to do and let him breathe and think about it a little bit, or, at least, start maybe coming up with some ideas, because, you're a partner with that photographer. And if they know in advance, they have some time to think about it. Sometimes even talk to an editor. Talk to an editor about, hey, listen, this is what I intend to do. When you edit this, how should I shoot so that when you edit this, it's going to really look hot? What can I do in the shooting that'll help you when we bring it back to the station? So wrap all these people into your little product here. So then, and then at that point, after we walk through the woods, and then we get to the clearing, then we walk out and we reveal what we're going to, and that's where we talk about what it is, and we show some of the interesting stuff associated with a bog. It's a very special place. Now, we had the mysterious, and so now we've now revealed the mysterious. That part's gone. It's not mysterious anymore, but that's when we then got into the creepy part, okay? Just for your information, a bog is a very low oxygen environment. Stuff that dies in the bog tends to not decompose because there's really not much in the way of bacteria down there. And so over in Europe, and you'll see this in the piece, they have routinely pulled out what are called bog bodies. I mean, like 10,000-year-old perfectly preserved humans from these bogs. And so, and they had a body in this bog, but it was a horse. Okay? And so, we mentioned even at the beginning of the piece, this is unbelievably beautiful, but it's creepy too. And we held the creepy now until, kind of the very end of the piece. And so, part of it was the writing. Part of it was holding off on revealing what we're revealing until, my gosh, must have been halfway into the piece. And then the other part was that creepy part. And it just, the story just hit a home run. Now, I will say one other thing before we show the piece. It's better to be lucky than good. And since I'm not good, I really need to be lucky. And in this case, during the piece, while it was running, while we were in the studio, my stage manager said, and she's in her 30s, my stage manager said, Paul, oh my God, my fifth grade class went to Camp Oyesa, and that bog was the coolest thing. That's what I remember about the camp. And there's my tag. I had other things. I had to pitch the website and stuff like that. But it just, things like that, I think it was Emily that said, about the human factor. That was an unexpected human factor to that story. My stage manager, right in the middle of the story, telling me that, it was the coolest. She remembered it all the way from fifth grade, how cool that place was. So I've kind of given you the thought process now. And again, this is not for every story in terms of creativity. Each story is different. If you're in a lab with a scientist doing an experiment, and let's say there's sparks and little, well, get as many different shots of that, close up, wide shots, and then, like I say, take the microphone, get that as close as you can, and get that natural sound. Natural sound is something that can separate a piece from all others. And in fact, to make this even more special, we even scored it with some music. We put some music in the piece as well. And this aired on a Sunday morning, and it was the perfect Sunday morning piece. Okay, so we're going to run that now and let you take a look at the finished product now that we've told you about the thought process.
Only on 4 This Morning, Michigan's identity might be its Great Lakes, but our state has other amazing environmental jewels, including some rare ones a lot closer to home than you might think. Local forecaster Paul Gross takes us to a fascinating place right here in Metro Detroit.
Remember, he didn't say bog.
At first glance, Camp Oyesa looks like any other camp. Located in northwest Oakland County between Milford and Holly, it has a nice, rustic lodge overlooking a beautiful lake. Lots of open space for activities, plenty of trees. But deep inside this forest is a rare environmental treasure that I'll bet you didn't even know existed here in Michigan. Come with me as I take you on a journey to a fascinating place that's not only unbelievably beautiful, but a little on the creepy side too. Things initially look pretty normal as we hike through these woods. I mean, this pretty much looks like any other forest, but here is the first sign that things are changing, the sudden appearance of these ferns. Deep in the forest, things still don't look that much out of the ordinary, but you'll notice that I am walking on a wooden path, and there's a very important reason for that. We're starting to lose the very ground beneath us. All right, we have finally reached this clearing in the middle of the forest, a clearing that reveals this stunning view of rare plants and the life they support. This is not a marsh. This is not a swamp. What you are looking at is called a bog.
They're very rare. In Oakland County, they're certainly not common. They're very rare systems. I only know of a handful of them in this part of the state, in this part of the county. These types of wetland environments are where you're going to find the rarest types of plants and animals.
This area was carved out by glaciers 10,000 years ago. Think of it as a giant pothole. The resulting lake is totally isolated. It was never ever replenished by groundwater and eventually became an oxygen and nutrient poor environment. For example, see this tamarack pine growing at the edge of the bog? Now look at the same tree growing in the bog. Believe it or not, these two trees are the same age. One rare plant that thrives here is sphagnum moss, which slowly grows on top of itself over thousands of years, forming a material below called peat. Here in this bog, we are standing on 6 feet of sphagnum, and strange things grow on top of this moss.
So it's called a pitcher plant, and the thing that is really interesting about this plant is that it gets its nutrients from insects that it catches. And in the bottom, it's full of water. That's why it's called a pitcher plant, like a water pitcher. And inside this water is a small amount of acid, kind of like your stomach acid, and it uses it to digest the insects.
And this story gets even creepier. Since a bog has so little oxygen, bacteria here exist in such small numbers that dead things don't decompose. Over in Europe, where bogs are much more common, preserved bodies pulled from the muck are called bog bodies, and archaeologists have even found 10,000-year-old preserved humans in bogs. Are there any bog bodies here at Camp Oyesa?
Our bog body at Camp Oyesa happens to be a horse named Cookie. And back in the early 70s, she got lost and broke through the ice and fell into the bog. They tried to get her out, but she's still there.
Bogs are rare in southern Michigan, but they are an important part of our state's natural heritage. Fortunately, we have the opportunity to appreciate one up close and personal right here in Metro Detroit.
Some cool stuff in that bog. How about that, Paul?
Isn't that amazing?
It really is.
And, you know, the people here in Detroit actually have an opportunity to see that bog for themselves because next weekend, Camp Oyesa is having an open house called Harvest Fest. All sorts of activities, and they include a bog tour on that Harvest Fest. Now, you can find out everything you need about that on our website. Click on Detroit.com.
Use your website.
The power up button, that big red button in the upper left corner, and you can find out all the information under the weekend stories. And by the way, our stage manager, Michelle, just told me that she saw the bog as a fifth grader. Her class went out and visited Camp Oyesa, and she still remembers it as her favorite part of that whole
Very
camp
cool.
experience. Very cool.
Go out there and look for Cookie.
Don't look for Cookie.
Don't go in there, but, you know, she's, all right.
Yeah, she's got it.
All right. Paul, thank you.
That's a rare thing. Paul Gross almost speechless, but when he suggested to go out in the bog and looking for the horse, you know. But wasn't that cool? Now, I do have a question. How long, the whole segment from the start of from the anchor reading all the way to the end of what we just finished with, how long do you think that was?
2:30.
Okay, who thinks 2:30? 3? 3:30? 4? More than 4? Okay, that whole thing was 4 minutes. 4 minutes. Now let me tell you, the weekend morning show producers will let you do this stuff. And I mean, there was one show where the Perseid meteor shower was going on. I happened to be working that show. And I tell you, where's Kelly?
Kelly at a you talk about Mr. News you can use. Kelly at a conference about, oh my God, 5, 6, 7 years ago, showed us how to make a comet. Remember the recipe for a comet? Well, I thought that was one of the coolest things, so I asked the producer, and she gave me about a 3-minute block of time to explain why passing through the Earth, passing through the tail of a comet, will, you know, generate our meteor showers, and it involved dry ice and water and other stuff. And it was, I'll tell you what, it was some of the coolest TV I've ever done. And again, it was like a 3.5 minute, you know, segment. And again, it was a newscast I was the weather anchor for on that particular morning. I was doing the onset weather. And, you know, you guys can do this stuff. And it's just you have to think out of the box from a creative standpoint. You just, you know, you need to, you know, think, like I say, the editor picked the music. I didn't have anything to do with that. That was the editor who picked the music there. But didn't that add aesthetically to the piece? I thought it was great. And then the Nat Sound things that we talked about, you saw how that, you know, that walk through the forest, I mean, didn't that, and then, you know, the thing going in, the stick going in the muck, all that stuff was stuff that the photographer and I talked about. And you know, and by the way, there's a term you want to remember, and that's called overshoot. That means have your photographer shoot more than you could possibly use. Because I've gone out with photographers occasionally on stories, and I think they're shooting, you know, all sorts of stuff, and I get back, and I don't have nearly enough B-roll to cover what I want to do in the story. So, you know, just make sure your photographer overshoots. In other words, get as much stuff, every angle, you know, zooms, you know, zoom in, pan out, you know, zoom out, pans, anything. And don't forget about movement. That's the other thing. I you know, some of the pieces, like those, you know, I could have just stood stationary and said, hey, look at these ferns. I could have stood stationary and said, here, look at the stick going into the ground. But the movement was something that, again, and I've talked about this in past conferences, walking stand-ups, movement in your stand-ups. And even if you're in a position where you can't move, have the cameraman move, pan from something to you or from you to something. All of those things are things that come together that make these pieces stand out and be separated from all the other stuff that people see in a newscast. And by the way, this was nominated for an Emmy. We have one of the most competitive Emmy competitions in our local competition, and it didn't win, but a good friend of mine won the Emmy for a very, very good story. But again, you know, you do this stuff, and this is another incentive, you know, to do some of this stuff. You know, all of the Emmys now, by the way, closing thought, and then we'll do questions. All of the Emmy competition now, they have the option to do a science and environmental category. Okay, so when you're Emmys, you should contact your local Emmy chapter and find out if that's a category when your Emmy competition comes up. Because, you know, as you know, not a lot of reporters don't do, you know, this kind of stuff. So this is a category where you can really excel. And again, you know, we talk about making yourself look better, profiling you in front of your management. Listen, if you're winning Emmys for this stuff, boy, you better believe that's going to open the door to do more of this stuff. You want that crew, and you tell them it's a really nice story, they'll remember the last couple of Emmys you got, and they say, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead. So, all right, that's it. I don't know if you know how we're doing on time here. I think we're doing okay, actually. So if there's a question or a comment, that's fine, or we can talk later. By the way, I am leaving today. I have to head to the airport at 5 o'clock, so if you want to talk more about this stuff, we'll have to do it before then, because I won't be here tonight or tomorrow. But no other comments? Okay, great. Thank you.